The man who helped turn brick into bricks, Professor Anil Sukhlal, South African High Commissioner to India. Welcome to India, Russia and the World.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Do you believe the relationship between India and South Africa, it still carries the emotional legacy of Mahatma Gandhi and Nelson Mandela?
I think that's a major gel in our relationship. You know, Gandhi Mandela is what underpins this relationship. We always take pride in the fact that Gandhi spent 21 years in South Africa, his very formative period in terms of his political philosophy, his life's philosophy were articulated as a direct result of his experiences in South Africa. And that impacted on India's freedom struggle. Mandela has openly stated and written about this in his book, The Long Walk to Freedom, about how Gandhi influenced his life and how Gandhi's philosophy impacted on the South African struggle. So we have that bonding between Mandela and Gandhi in terms of our respective struggles.
India has Viksit Bharat 2047. Africa has Agenda 2063. Both are long transformational developmental projects. Does South Africa see India as a partner aligned with where Africa wants to go?
Absolutely. India has been very much part of our post-democracy development. And India has been very much part of Africa's development. And this is historical. India was at the forefront of supporting our struggle for freedom and fighting the apartheid regime. In fact, it was India that was the first country, way back in 1946, on the eve of your independence, that imposed sanctions, economic sanctions, against the apartheid regime, the very first country. And you were the first country to take this issue to the United Nations and make it a global issue.
Both India and South Africa, they've experienced colonialism. Does that shared history still shape the diplomatic understanding between the two countries?
Very much so. I think the elements of colonialism that impacted on all facets of our lives are not totally absent from our communities today. And when we became independent states, we were left ravaged. India's economy, which was almost, together with China, over 50% of the global economy prior to colonialism, fell to about 2 or 3% of the global GDP. Same, South Africa was left plundered.
Yeah.
So it takes generations to rebuild your society and your country. Henceforth, realistic goal in terms of Viksit Bharat 2047. A whole century after decolonization. Same with the African continent. Agenda 2063 is a full century after most of the African countries achieved independence.
Strait of Hormuz is closed. Fuel prices are through the roof. How has that impacted South Africa, but also Africa as a continent?
Energy supplies, especially fuel and gas, is a major challenge for all of us. That's why we are seeing in all of our countries escalating cost of petrol, diesel, and gas. And this impacts on all walks of life. So we have to find alternative routes, alternative sources of supply. And one of the repercussions of this is that normally these tankers would not round the Cape of Good Hope. But what we are seeing is a drastic increase in the number of ships surrounding the Cape of Good Hope to bypass the Strait of Hormuz. This has some positive impact for South Africa because we have far more traffic at our ports as a result of this. But we have to find a solution to the crisis because if you have this for a prolonged period, it's going to have serious repercussions on global growth and on the growth of our respective economies. And this directly impacts on job security. So it has a ripple effect on so many facets of our life and of our countries. And unfortunately, it is the poorer, developing countries that bear the brunt of this crisis.
exactly my point. This war on Iran was started by the West. Do you see a pattern here? The West starting these mindless wars and the global South, Africa, Asia, suffering.
Well, I think you have to see what is happening in terms of the global geopolitical security environment within the larger context of a shift in global power. The rise of the global South doesn't sit comfortably with those countries that were the hegemons in terms of dominating the global geopolitical, economic, trade, financial space. Now, countries of the global South, countries like India, Brazil, China, South Africa, that are now rising and occupying spaces within the global geopolitical, financial and economic environment is not something that is welcome by the global community. You had a very lopsided sharing of the global geoeconomic space dominated by the global North. Very recent figures coming from the IMF in terms of global GDP growth this year. Three countries, India accounting for 17%, China 27%, and Indonesia about 4%. 48% of global GDP growth is coming from three countries in the global South. The USA is going to account for about 9.9% growth, the European Union about 9.7%. So you can see where the global growth points are today. It's shifted to the global South. And this is the reason why you are seeing this struggle for geopolitical space, for geopolitical control. And it's manifesting in these kind of conflicts, unfortunately.
South Africa chaired BRICS in 2013, 2018, and then in 2023. You were the Sherpa for all three. What is that one thing that South Africa has changed inside BRICS that nobody talks about?
Well, I think one of the things that we did way back in 2013, the first time we chaired BRICS, is to institutionalize the fourth pillar of BRICS cooperation. Now, if you look at BRICS cooperation, it's centered around three major pillars: the political and security, the economic and financial, and the social and people-to-people. The fourth unseen pillar, which was introduced by South Africa in 2013, was institutional development. One of the first things we did in 2013 was to draw up a set of guidelines in terms of the role of Sherpas and Su-Sherpas, the role of our leaders at summit and the structure of summits. And we were the country that put out the initial document that led to us all adopting a standardized format in terms of how summits are run and how the calendar is run.
The BRICS foreign ministers meeting in Delhi, it ended without a joint statement on Iran. What does the divide actually mean? And just as importantly, what does it not mean for the future of the BRICS bloc?
Well, I think one should not read too much into the fact that we were not able to produce a consensus outcome document. But you must understand that this is not unique to BRICS. G7 has failed in recent times to do so. G20 is increasingly finding it difficult to do so, and so are other multilateral bodies. It's because of the current global environment, and one has to be realistic. Not having a consensus document does not mean that the bloc is being weakened. At least at the BRICS foreign ministers meeting, Iran and the UAE were in the same room and they were addressing each other. And I think that's the unique strength of BRICS, that you had in a very civil manner. They may have disagreed in terms of what they said to each other, but the other BRICS countries also added the voice, urging that we need to find a way of resolving these differences for the greater good, not just of the bilateral relations between Iran and the UAE, but for the greater good of the global South, because I believe both the UAE and Iran are on the same page as other BRICS countries in terms of the kind of global order that's evolving, that we'd like to be part of and play a very important role in shaping that.
You've said that India took over BRICS at perhaps the most difficult time in recent history. From South Africa's perspective, what is the single biggest test India faces as a chair?
Well, I think India took the chair at a time of multifold challenges. You had to grasp with the challenges around Gaza, Palestine, the Palestine-Israel issue. You had to also deal with the ongoing Russia-Ukraine tensions. And more importantly, you had to deal with the issue of the weaponization of tariffs that impacted on the global economy. And of course, more recently, the conflict between the USA and Israel vis-a-vis Iran. And today we live in a globalized, interconnected world. The conflict may be in Western Asia, but it impacts equally on all of us.
India introduced the African Union into the G20 bloc as a permanent member. This is something that Africa has pushed for decades. What did this moment mean to you?
I think it was a very historical moment. But I think for the African continent, it was addressing something that should have been there much earlier. That it took 18 summits for the African Union to get a chair around the G20 table. I think that says a lot about the marginalization of Africa. And we were very grateful to Prime Minister Modi and the Indian government that took it upon themselves during the Indian presidency to make sure that this injustice to an entire continent of 54 countries was corrected. I think it was long overdue, and credit to India for pushing this.
When South Africa hosted the first ever G20 on African soil, Trump boycotted it and didn't sign the declaration. Then he banned South Africa from the next one. How do you react?
The G20 is a consensus-based organization, and it's a rules-based organization. The African Union waited patiently to become a full member through a process that was initiated under India's presidency, and it was the collective of the G20 leadership where this was put forward to them to say, we want that African Union become a full member. And it was unanimously endorsed and a consensus decision. Now, how do you get one country that comes and decide to change the makeup of a consensus-based organization? That is irregular, unfortunate, and as President Ramaphosa stated, It was not South Africa's loss that President Trump did not attend the summit and the USA's chair was left vacant. It was the loss of the USA. It was not the loss of the G20. Of course, as the most powerful global economy and nation, it's unfortunate that they absented themselves. And South Africa will occupy its rightful place at the G20 table next year when the UK chairs, because we belong there. And no country has the right to remove unilaterally any member state.
President Trump sat next to President Ramaphosa and he played videos claiming genocide of white farmers in South Africa. Western media ran that story. They didn't even mention that the videos were wrong until days later. Do you think there's something off about the way Western media covers Africa?
Of course. Western media has a bias towards the African continent. That's a given fact.
Okay.
Right? We don't have the resources to have global media houses that projects on the global stage that Western media companies have. And unfortunately, many of these media houses are not independent. That's the reality of the global media space today. And the projection of that video is not a true reflection of South African society. Why is it in this entire global community of 193 United Nations member states, one country out of 193 member states, UN member states, indicate that there's a problem of genocide in South Africa. No other country has ever said that South Africa has a genocide problem. So this is a manufactured story by one country to demonize South Africa.
South Africa has filed the ICJ genocide case against Israel and has pushed for accountability over the crimes against humanity in Gaza. Is South Africa doing what many Western countries are unwilling to do?
Of course, South Africa enjoys a very historical relationship with the people of Palestine, and especially the Palestinian struggle for sovereignty and independence and independent Palestinian state. Because the leaders of the South African liberation struggle and the leaders, especially of Fatah on the Palestinian side, were comrades in arms. That's how we refer to ourselves. We were fighting a common struggle: freedom in South Africa and independent state in Palestine. So when we became free in 1994, Mandela is quoted severally on a very famous quote he made on the occasion of our democracy. He said, as long as Palestine is not free, South Africa can never be truly free.
Wow.
So we have a moral obligation and also a historical bondage to the plight and cause of Palestinian statehood. So South Africa, based on our own experiences of the discrimination the majority community faced, the savage treatment where our leaders were killed, detained, banned, blood was shed. Based on that experience, we have this emotional bondage of working towards the vision of Palestinian statehood. And therefore, it was natural, it's ingrained into our foreign policy, that South Africa could not be a silent witness to the atrocities that were taking place and continue to take place, especially in Gaza.
India and Africa, they've both been discussing local currency settlement, so paying for trade in rupees and rands. How close are we to making it actually work?
Well, I think we're quite close. This has been an ongoing discussion within BRICS for many, many years. It's not a new issue. Very often you read articles that BRICS is about de-dollarization. We've never been about de-dollarization. BRICS is not obsessed with issues of the global West. On the contrary, BRICS is focused on issues of our own development and the collective rise of the global South, in partnership with those countries of the global West that have the same vision for a cooperative, inclusive world. So dealing in our own currencies is natural. Why should we constantly be dependent on a foreign currency in trading between ourselves? I think those days are coming to an end.
Indian pharmaceutical companies, they provide generics to South Africa's public healthcare system at prices that no Western countries can match. Is India then seen as South Africa's strategic healthcare partner?
Very. It's one of the areas that's at the center of our cooperation and in terms of our economic interaction. I would say not just India and South Africa, India and Africa. You were one of the very first countries that came to the aid of Africa during the pandemic when we were left wanting and we didn't get help from partners in the West. It was India that was the first point of call to assist Africa. Now, as a result of what the pandemic displayed in terms of Africa's deficiencies and development within the pharmaceutical medical space, the African Union took a decision to create an African pharmaceutical hub, and South Africa was chosen to be this hub. So we are creating the African vaccine hub in South Africa, and we are working with a number of Indian companies and including directly with the Indian government to make Africa self-sufficient. And the goal is that by 2040, at least 60% of drugs for the African continent should be manufactured in the continent, and India is an important partner in that exercise.
all wars end through negotiations. These are Cyril Ramaphosa's words to Vladimir Putin. This was in February sometime on a phone call. Is South Africa signaling a larger diplomatic role in efforts to perhaps end the Ukrainian conflict?
Well, President Ramaphosa made that statement out of his own experience because he was our lead negotiator as we were transiting from apartheid to democracy on the part of the African National Congress, the party of Nelson Mandela. So our own experience has demonstrated that it's not through the barrel of a gun that you'll bring about peace. It is only by sitting around the table with your adversaries, as was the case in South Africa, no matter how different our ideologies and political views may be, but only through discussion and by listening and hearing each other that we can find solutions. So therefore, we keep saying, based on our own experience, diplomacy through dialogue does work. There is no war that has brought winners.
Soviet support kept the African National Congress alive during the darkest years of the white minority rule. The West just looked the other side. Is South Africa's relationship with Russia rooted in history rather than, say, convenience?
Like India, it's a historical relationship that we enjoy with what was then the USSR. The USSR was one of the major, major supporters of the liberation struggle in South Africa. A number of our leaders, even current ministers in our government, were exiled in Russia when they were banned from South Africa or they had to leave because of political persecution. Many of them went and settled in Russia, in the USSR then, where they received education, they received training, and where they were skilled. So we have this historical relationship where Russia stood with us and provided us the support that we needed and to shape some of our leaders who are now in positions of power in the South African government and other sectors of South African society.
South Africa also operates Africa's only nuclear power plant. It has signed an MOU with Russia for developing the nuclear power plant for the country. How critical is this partnership in the energy security?
Well, look, we are looking at diversifying our energy needs, and there's a concerted effort by government that all new energy streams must be green energy. Nuclear is an integral part of that diversification. As you pointed out, the only nuclear power plant on the continent, first and foremost, developed in South Africa. And in this new mix, government has taken a decision that at least 40% of all new energy streams must be green energy. So, yes, we will work with our international partners to also expand our nuclear energy mix in terms of our larger energy mix.
What role can India, South Africa, and Russia collectively play in the shaping of alternate global conversations?
We're doing it at the moment. As members of BRICS, India, South Africa, Russia, and the other members of BRICS are at the forefront of shaping a multipolar global system. We don't want a global system that is unipolar, that is bipolar. We don't want hegemons anymore. And our leaders, Russia, South Africa, India included, all already speak of a multipolar world. So for BRICS countries, we are already in a multipolar society. And I think you are seeing this. Global power has shifted. There is no one country today that can dictate to the world on how each one of us should conduct our independent sovereign affairs. I think those days are gone. And countries like Russia, India and South Africa that want to see a more inclusive global world system, a multipolar world system, are working together towards that vision.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.